The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Miku, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. There is, as many of you know, a housing crisis in our world. It began before President Barack Obama was named elected President of the United States of America, but it continues. Foreclosures are rising. Loans for new homes are dropping. Money being given to banks is rising. The question is, what gives here, and what is happening in our communities? We're going to talk today to a number of people. Part of what we're going to do today is answer your questions. There are many of you who are facing foreclosure, many of you who feel you're on the brink of not being able to keep your homes. We have housing counselors in the studio to talk about that and to answer your questions during the course of these 2 hours. We're going to talk on these 2 hours about why this crisis started, how it started, what's going on now, and what to do about it, and how you can be involved also. Go to a film tomorrow night to see the heart of this problem, a film that was centered in Baltimore. Two of our guests are part of that film. And also a demonstration is taking place this Thursday at Wells Fargo Bank, which we'll be talking about as well. It was part of an article in New York Times this week talking about how Wells Fargo pushed loans on African-American communities, but in a highly racist fashion that suckered people in. We'll talk about that and more during the course of this hour. We're joined in studio by Bob Strupp, who you'll see in that film, who is Director of Research and Policy at the Community Law Center. We're also joined in studio by Claudia Ray, who is the Loss Mitigation Manager for Outreach at Acorn Housing. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for the first time.
It's great to have you on the air. Carl Cleary is back. It's been a while since he's been on. He's Housing Counselor at Reservoir Hill, but is a man who knows a huge amount about housing and the housing crisis in this country and has been involved in this for a very long time. And, Carl, good to see you in the studio.
Same here, Mark. Good to see you.
And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Remember now, one of the things people will be doing here, Claudia, as well as Carl, is be able to answer your questions, and Bob, about the crisis you may face. There are tens of thousands of people on the brink of losing their homes in this community, and you may be one of them. And fear not to call and just have your questions asked, and we may be able to give you some answers, steer you in the right direction. If you are a renter, which we'll talk about, of course, this hour, too, because many people are renting from places that are being foreclosed upon, what do you do? Join us here at 410-319-8888. We'll get to your calls as they come in to answer those questions. But let's go back to the beginning here. I mean, this is a very special two-hour town meeting we're having to talk about the housing crisis. And let's talk about where this all started. I mean, It almost seems like madness when we talk about the numbers of houses that are going up for foreclosure in the state of Maryland, and especially in working class communities. So, Carl, when we last saw each other, I think this was a while back. And you were working on a program then about house flipping.
Correct.
That was about 10 years ago, wasn't it?
It was about 10 years ago.
Right.
The weird thing about that time, Mark, was that the folks that we've talked about this before. Those folks were, and I told you this before. Those folks were the canaries in the coal mine. These are people who, for lack of a better word, were just kind of sucked into pretty bad deals. Now, in those situations, they were sold houses where the value just didn't match what the debt was that they ended up with on their mortgages, $25,000 houses with $65,000 mortgages. But more or less the same scenario. Folks who were, we'll say, unsophisticated borrowers, being fully informed by the seller. They had all the information was coming just from the seller, no benefit of housing counseling or anything like that, and just gotten bad deals. The sad situation that ended up with that was some of those folks ended up losing their homes, damaging their credit, and we end up with a lot of vacancies across the city. So it's not too different than where things are now, but same situation. Folks in situations where they had very few choices as renters decided buying can't be that much worse than where I am now and ended up in bad deals.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to introduce Michael Greenberger and send you on the phone with us now.
Yes, how are you?
Welcome. Good to hear your voice.
Same here.
Michael Greenberger is a professor at the University of Maryland School of Law. He's a former director of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He testified in Capitol Hill close to a dozen times on issues pertaining to dysfunctions in our financial markets caused by this complex, unregulated world of derivatives, which many people think is at the heart of this subprime meltdown and a real catalyst for the crisis that we're facing economically. Bob, let me let you come in, and I'm going to bring Michael right in. And Michael, our other guests here are Bob Strupp, Director of Research and Policy at the Community Law Center. Just heard Carl Cleary, who's a housing counselor at Reservoir Hill, who's been in this business for a long time, and Claudia Ray, who is Loss Mitigation Manager for Outreach at Acorn Housing. And encouraging all of you to call in with your thoughts and questions, because if you have a housing crisis of your own, if you feel your mortgage is on the brink, if you want questions answered just about policy in general, but if you have questions about your own home, Claudia Ray is here, and Carl Clear and others can answer your questions about what you can do. What you can do to kind of maintain your home and possibilities moving ahead. And Congressman Cummings will be joining us in about a half an hour to talk a bit about that as well. But Bob, and then go to Michael.
Good afternoon. I was just going to say, I think that a catalyst of this goes back even further than what Carl was alluding to. Back in 1986, we changed our interest deductions for debt so that no longer was consumer debt when you went out and bought a car or your credit card debt tax deductible, and there was this myth being dispelled or being perpetrated on American consumers that the only that they had to own a home because that was their way of getting a tax deduction. So folks went out and they bought houses thinking that and they had interest payments on their mortgages, thinking that they needed these for tax deductions, even though some of them weren't even paying taxes or very little. Some of them weren't itemizing. And so there were all kinds of myths being perpetrated out there that it was very important to own a home versus rent, and it was going to cost you less when, of course, in many cases it wouldn't. And I think this is a responsible for bloating the value of housing that then began to occur. And, of course, we saw a tremendous inflation of housing prices from 2000 to 2006. But it was all part of this myth that was being conceived that if you and shame that was perpetrated, you know, on renters, you know, that, oh, you don't own a home, you're flushing your money down the toilet. Shame on you. Well, that was all wrong. But I think the Tax Reform Act of 1986 really caused this, because the only place you could get a tax deduction was from your mortgage.
That's a very critical piece of this. I mean, there's a whole history of this that goes back from the 60s to the 90s, with a whittling down of regulation kind of let these prices explode. And Michael, let's talk a bit about that history, would you? Explain to us a bit from your perspective about what this world of derivatives meant and why it was at the heart of all this and how it got there.
I'd be happy to. First, I want to say, and I hope I have a chance to talk a little more about this, that tomorrow night at the Charles Theater, there is a documentary that was produced by two very famous and successful documentarians, Leslie and Andrew Coburn, and it's called American Casino. And it goes through the entire housing subprime meltdown from beginning to end in a documentary fashion. And it focuses principally on Baltimore and three Baltimore homeowners who are very articulate, smart people: Denzel Mitchell, a high school teacher; Ameline Wade, a reverend who is now homeless; and Patricia McNair, who is a therapist at Johns Hopkins. They're all African Americans, and they all got talked into by slick mortgage lenders into taking out mortgages that were really unsustainable based on their income, and they all lost their homes. And I think, for one thing, this documentary belies this widespread belief, principally promoted by CNBC, the cable news channel, especially Mr. Santorelli, who said all these people who lost their houses were, quote, losers, close quote. These people, as you will see if you see this documentary, are far from losers. They're very intelligent, very well-meaning, who got caught up in a terrible nightmare. And then when they fell behind in their payments, they really were given a complete stiff arm by the banks who were the lenders. It's quite a moving and very interesting documentary. And from the perspective of derivatives, Mark, which you asked about, it not only goes from the front end of these mortgages that were missold or sold to people. I mean, some of these people were entitled to prime mortgages where they could have paid 3 points less in interest or $100,000 over the life of the mortgage. But, you know, through a lot of fast talking, they get talked into the subprime where the interest rates were higher and the entire documentation was confusing. It's just really an awful mess. This begs the question, you know, for people who are loaning this money and loaning in a way where they knew that there were going to be a high rate of defaults, why did they ever get into that business? Why did any respectable bank ever get into that business? And the answer essentially is that these banks thought that they had insurance through a very complicated technical term called credit default swaps. Credit default swaps are the exchange of a guarantee for a premium. The reason they technically wouldn't call it insurance was that insurance is regulated by the states, and swaps or credit default swaps were deregulated through a very unthinking act by Congress in the closing days after the 2000 election. And so what you essentially had here were people who thought they were insured against defaults by people who probably couldn't pay back the loan given the harsh terms of the mortgage, thought they had insurance, but because the market was deregulated, the people they got the insurance from never set aside capital to make the payments. So I think the thing your listeners would probably most respond to in their understanding of this crisis, AIG, which was a company worth $200 billion and had over 20 subsidiaries, had this tiny little subsidiary in London that was issuing this insurance, or what they wanted to call credit default swaps, to the tune of $400 billion. That is, they insured losses of $400 billion, and they never had to put up a penny to demonstrate that they would be able to pay it back. When housing prices went down and the defaults came due, all the lenders who thought they were insured turned around and asked for their insurance, and the cupboard was bare. It gets much worse than that because people were so interested in taking bets that these mortgages wouldn't get paid off that companies like AIG not only sold what we would think of as insurance or protecting a real risk in terms of making loans and making sure the loan payments would be insured, there were a lot of people who just wanted to bet that the mortgages wouldn't be paid. So for every one credit default swap that insured real risk in making a loan and making sure it was covered, there were at least three, some people say as many as eight times the number of credit default swaps, called naked credit default swaps, where AIG was just accommodating someone who wanted to bet that these loans would never get paid. So when you have a loan failure or a failure to make payment, it's not only the real economic loss we suffered, but people were betting on it. So for every loan that didn't get paid, you had 3 to 8 times the number of people who wanted to collect on their bet that the loan didn't get paid. Of course, as we know, AIG ran out of money, so all the people who bet that the loans wouldn't get paid were for a few brief moments in danger of themselves facing bankruptcy, but they were rescued because the American taxpayer took AIG over, funneled $165 billion with a B, to AIG. That money went in the front door of AIG and out the back door to all these fancy big institutions that were betting that people such as our Baltimore friends who were the focus of this documentary would not pay their mortgages. The poster child for this is Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs was paid out of the $165 billion of taxpayer funds $14 billion to cover the bets that they had made and that AIG couldn't pay up. Now, this all occurred, this entire market, the craziness occurred because they deregulated these derivatives. They said, we're not going to, the federal government will have nothing to do with them. They'll be private transactions. And knowing that they were essentially inviting all these fancy institutions to place bets, they preempted state gaming laws. Because if Goldman Sachs is betting that Baltimore homeowners won't pay their mortgages without any interest in the underlying transaction, Maryland could take the position that that's an illegal casino and that they don't have a license. And by the way, the license would have required that the person, the casino, have appropriate capital to pay off the bets. Yes. But we didn't have federal regulation, state gambling laws were preempted, and we have the mess we are in today. These credit default swaps are a minimum of a $23 to $25 trillion market. Some people estimate as high as $60 to $70 trillion. That far exceeds the gross domestic product of the United States by a factor of several points. And it's sort of the hidden outrage of this. And the documentary, America's Casino, takes you through all this and explains how these crazy bets exacerbated the real economic losses and how the American taxpayer is essentially playing the guarantor of the bookies who allowed people to bet against homeowners.
Well, Michael Greenberger, that was a story from deep on the inside of this, given the world, the work that you did. And I want to come back and kind of parse some of this out, but I want to turn for a moment here to what's going on locally. I mean, it seems to me that the question is, I want to explore in the course of this hour and later about what we can do about that, what society can push for. I mean, I always remind everybody that Barack Obama, when he was asked the question, who would Martin Luther King vote for, Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton? Barack Obama said neither one. Barack Obama said that Martin Luther King would be here organizing a mass social movement to force us to do what's right. And so the question is, what should be done that's right to turn this around is what I'm interested in. And you know, given, and also talk more about the history of this. But I want to turn for a moment, if Claudia and Bob, since you do this work every day as well, and Carl, could talk a bit about what's happening to the people that you work with every day. Then we'll come back to some policy. But I want to encourage people to also call me at 410-319-8888. With your thoughts on the housing crisis, and if you have a personal issue, some of our guests are here today to help you walk through them and help you figure out where to go to resolve the crisis to try to stop you from losing your home. But, Claudia, can you talk a bit about, tell us a bit about what you face every day with the people you work with.
Well, let me just say first that where our clients are at, the unemployment rate is going up across the country everywhere.
9.4%, I think I saw, right. saw this morning.
So yeah. We're seeing that. We're also seeing the fact that individual family members and homeowners are scared. And they're reaching out to us at the last stage versus then the beginning of the process. Education is important. We're seeing people come through the door with the notice of foreclosure versus coming in knowing that their homes were not affordable in the very beginning. And we're trying to change that around. We're trying to outreach to people now to say, you know, our doors are open. This national foreclosure crisis has affected the housing counseling agency tremendously with capacity size. There's no money available for housing counseling. But the housing counseling agencies are, you know, working every day to see if they can help these individual clients, but it's also putting a toll on the counseling agencies as well because of the number of foreclosures that's rising. That means more people coming in our doors. And we need to have, you know, money to actually sustain the housing counseling industry as well in order to help more people. So, I mean, that's what we're facing. We're facing the level of capacity issues, you know, and we definitely need our state legislation to help us with, you know, getting more money for the housing counseling industry. And then we also seeing the fact that, you know, people are suffering out there for losing their homes, being scared to outreach and real and I guess thinking that there's no resources, but there are resources. And I have to say that this Make Your Home Affordable plan has been one of the best plans that came about since we began this process.
Bob, you want to say something? I'm up from the phone here for a minute.
Just for a second, I think just to put it in perspective, and there's a lot of different data sources out there, but there were some 390 foreclosure filings in Baltimore in April. And so that's pushing 5,000 a year. This is near the high level. So to understand, there are many, many people who are still facing foreclosure. The problem has certainly not subsided. We heard about scared homeowners. There are very frustrated homeowners out there because for the longest time, you know, they were being told different things. You know, we can't talk to you unless you're late. We can't talk to you if you ever were late.
Right.
And so there's all this kind of confusion and frustration. And one of the main sources of trying to unravel that and trying to help these frustrated and scared homeowners is the counseling industry, which is way underfunded and is unable to meet the load of homeowners out there who are seeking help.
Hey, Mark, this is Carl. Let me kind of tell you who it is that's coming through these doors, you know, with these problems. The loans that, just as I'll pick on a period of time, the loans that were written in, let's say, 2003, 2005, that might have been, we'll say, questionable to start off with, or we'll say marginal borrowers or whatever it might be. And I'm talking about the ARMs, the adjustable rate mortgages, the buy-downs, the interest-only loans, and so forth. Those loans are starting to become... They've triggered this, we'll say, the next step, where either the interest rate changes or there's some factor where folks who were probably struggling to start off with to make these payments are now really struggling. They have a situation where they just don't have the money to make these new payments that are being required. And the logic, you know, on the front end of these loans was, you know, whether the ARMs or the buy downs, whatever you might be talking about, was that in 3 to 5 years, your income will change to be affordable then, and, you know, the whole story that goes with that. Well, more, as Claudia was saying, more and more people are being laid off. Incomes, household incomes are going down. Those loans are maturing into just horrible contracts. These folks are trying to keep up with, and they can't do it. The money's just not there. To make it even a little bit more insidious, the value of the houses on these loans are using as collateral has dropped. So even folks who might, for one reason or another, hasn't had their credit impaired by a late payment or something like that, who would normally go out and just refi out of those loans, can't do so now because they're upside down. The houses are worth less than the amount owed on it.
So I want to talk about the policy implications, what we can do to change that. I'm going to hear what Michael Greenberg can say. I want to see what Elijah Cummings has, when he calls in. But let me open the phones here first before we return to Michael Greenberger, 410-319-8888. If you're calling in whatever issue you want to talk about policy, also just talk about your own situation and see if there's room for you to get help. And Fareed in Silver Spring, Maryland, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, I'm in Chapter 11 bankruptcy right now. And all my investment properties, I have a number of investment properties, they're all safe. And the loans are going to be reduced about those. But I can't get any help with my primary residence. The lender won't negotiate while I'm in bankruptcy, but at the same time, they're asking to lift stays. And it's funny that, you know, that my investments can be protected, but the home that I live in cannot be protected. You know, I didn't have a regular job at first, but now I'm unemployed and I can afford my mortgage. It's just they're like, hey, we want all the back money, too. So they won't even start accepting payments at this point. So is there anything that I can do?
Well, this is Michael Greenberger. You know, this is a very, very difficult story. And when Mark asks about policy, here again, you know, the Obama administration supported, and it was the position of the Democratic leadership in Congress, that bankruptcy judges could alter the terms of the mortgage when you were in bankruptcy.
Right.
It was called a cram down. And it looked like it was going to pass. There were no questions asked. The banking lobby went in. They had every excuse six ways from Sunday. Oh, this will mean uncertainty in contracts. Nobody will ever know when they make a loan if it's ever going to get paid back, et cetera, et cetera. And in the Senate, I think 15 Democrats switched their vote from supporting the cramdown to against it, in which the deputy majority leader, Senator Durbin from Illinois, said, "The banks run this place. You know, you talk about we don't have enough money to counsel people who are in trouble. Well, Goldman doesn't have that problem. They got $14 billion when their bets didn't get paid off, when they were betting that these mortgages wouldn't be paid. They didn't have to wait even a year to get their money, 100 cents on the dollar. So there's one thing about individual advice to give, and I think it's unfortunate in this situation, nothing can be done. But for the people listening to this program, it is very important that you reach out to your elected representatives and tell them it's time that the average homeowner, the regular guy in the street, gets help here. We've given trillions of dollars to the banks, who in turn have refused to extend credit or renegotiate these loans, and nothing to the homeowner, nothing to the average citizen. I might also say, I know you're going to have Congressman Cummings on. He has been an absolute star in this regard. He's been very, very good. I think that's true of most of the Maryland delegation. But I will tell you, the banks are in there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, lobbying against reform, lobbying against fixing this system at every level. And unless the American taxpayer and the American homeowner wakes up, there's sort of a theory that we're in a dawn right now, that we're coming out of this. I think it's a false dawn. There are too many people losing jobs in the real economy. More of these mortgages are going to be defaulted on. That will be a revolving crisis where more people will lose jobs. We have to stand up for ourselves and fight these bankers who can hire every lobbyist under the sun, who's prepared to talk about technicality and give every reason that reform shouldn't be made. We've got to stand up for ourselves. And until we do, this is just going to be an exacerbating crisis.
We take a short break and come right back to our other guests who all have something they want to say. And I know that Claudia Ray was about wanting to say something, and so is Bob Strupp. Number here is 410-319-8888. We will take a very short break, and I want to remind you of a couple things first. That vis-a-vis what Michael Greenberger was saying, that tomorrow night, American Casino, the film, will be playing at the Charles Theater. Both Michael Greenberger and Bob Strupp are featured in that film about three Maryland families who have fought and are losing their homes because of this crisis, and it tells about the history of the crisis. It'll be at the Charles Theater. You can go to Stambros, stambros.org, to buy tickets online. Or go to St. Ambrose Housing online and find out as well. And there's also a demonstration taking place this Thursday. We'll talk about why at Wells Fargo Bank at 1118 Light Street, June 11th at 4:30. And we'll talk about what Wells Fargo did, why they're being picketed and demonstrated against out of all the other banks, and come back to more of that. Remind you, the Mark Snyder Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, go to 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We have a two-hour special on the housing crisis that we face here in Baltimore, in the state of Maryland, in this country. We are joined by phone by Michael Greenberger, professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law, who's former director of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He has testified on Capitol Hill a dozen times to talk about the issues that created this crisis we're facing now in America. Bob Strupp is with us. He's director of research and policy at the Community Law Center. Both of them are featured in the film American Casino, which will be shown tomorrow night. It's a film by Angela and Lester? No, Leslie. Leslie Coburn. Two great filmmakers who made this documentary film about this crisis. And we'll tell you more about that in a little bit. We're also joined in the studio by Claudia Ray, who is the loss mitigation manager for outreach at Acorn Housing, and Carl Cleary, who's a housing counselor at Reservoir Hill and a real expert on these issues, will be joined shortly by Congressman Elijah Cummings, who will join us to talk about what is going on in Congress. And later in the second hour, we talk to Senator Anthony Muse from Prince George's County, who is putting in bills to try to address this issue as well. Number here is 410-319-8888. Before we go any further, I think both Bob Strupp and Claudia wanted to say something to Fareed about what he might do.
Well, first of all, with regard to his specific situation, I think he should consult with his bankruptcy attorney. I'm assuming that he's not handling this himself, and encourage his attorney to reach out to. Bankruptcy is such a niche practice that not all bankruptcy attorneys are up on the whole loan mod process, and there are attorneys and others in the housing counseling industry that might be able to help work out this loan mod process, even though the caller is in Chapter 11. With regards to the discussion about the cram down, that has sort of a negative connotation to it, but I really think there should be outrage in the community. Now, Maryland's congressional delegation certainly wasn't part of the fallout on the cram down. But what happened here was, if you have investment property or a vacation home, the bankruptcy judges are empowered to be able to reduce the principal on those loans right now under current law. But they're not empowered to do that on a personal residence. And that's the problem that the caller is facing. And it's really inexcusable, because that is such a necessary component here to be able to help consumers and be able to help taxpayers as one of many solutions. It is not certainly the solution. If it was the only solution, we could have had all kinds of run-on bankruptcy filings. But there really should be outrage here that is not an available option, just as there should be outrage here, as we were talking about earlier, that all these taxpayer dollars were going to help all of these institutions in Wall Street, but none of those taxpayer dollars that are going in the front door and out the back door are going into the taxpayer's wallet. They're not there.
I understand that we also now just joined by Congressman Elijah Cummings. Elijah, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Welcome.
Right here.
Good to have you with us. I'd like to – we can turn for a moment. And again, folks, call in at 410-319-8888. If you have questions about your own personal issues, we have housing counselors in the studio. Can answer your questions. Congressman Cummings had an event this weekend. It was attended by over 1,000 people who were trying to figure out how to save their mortgages. He had 19 banks and financial institutions there. And he was on the show last week to promote that event and talk about what was going on that day. And I wonder if we could, just for a moment, since we have Congressman Cummings on the line, going around the room with Michael Greenberger and Carl Cleary and Bob Strupp and Claudia Ray in the studio here, and talk about what you were just saying a moment ago, Michael Greenberger, about the outrage people should feel about what's going on with the housing crisis here in America and what these companies have been allowed to get away with, and the power of the banking industry and lobbying in Washington, D.C., and what should be done about it. What steps need to be taken? And maybe very quickly, Michael, if you could just say something about that. I'd like to hear Elijah's response and let everybody kind of join in on that and talk with him about what he sees on Capitol Hill.
Well, first of all, talking to Congressman Cummings about this is like preaching to the choir.
No, I understand that, but that's one of the good guys. But good guys give us good answers.
Congressman Cummings, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today, and he's been a strong advocate for all who are in difficulty. But look, I was saying earlier, Senator Durbin, when the mortgage adjustment for bankruptcy fell through, said the banks run this place. Sunday in the New York Times yesterday ran an editorial quoting the chairman of the House Ag Committee, who's put legislation in and got it through his committee, Colin Peterson, by the way, probably one of the more conservative Democrats in the House Democratic Caucus, who couldn't get what he wanted in his bill. Why? Quote, the banks run this place. I just think every vehicle needs to be used to get the average citizen up to speed. I think one of the reasons we're not up to speed is that it's a vast mystery to the average person. By the way, I think the movie American Casino answers a lot of those questions about how the hell this happened. And it almost aids those who don't want reform that we have a terrific mystery here. There's been a big push in Congress to establish, by one way or another, something called a PCORA Commission-like investigation. In the late 20s, a Senate Select Committee hired a very vigorous investigator, Ferdinand Pecora, who called all the perpetrators with his subpoena power to Congress and really got to the bottom of what caused the Great Depression.
Right.
And Roosevelt, when he became president, was greatly aided by all these findings of fact, if you will, and was able to initiate the Securities Act of 33 and 34 because there was a foundation. Right now, the American public is totally mystified as to what happened, and some people believe this is part of a normal cycle. These things just happen. Well, this was perpetrated by greed. It was perpetrated by deregulation. And I just think every effort needs to be made to inform the public at large the really ridiculous things that were allowed to happen here, and to form a citizen base that levels the playing field as far as lobbying is concerned.
Now, Elijah Cummings, I know you only have about 10 more minutes to stay with us because you have a busy schedule. So talk a bit about that. Last week you were talking about this event, and I want you to describe it to us in a few minutes, about what happened there and why so many people showed up and what that meant. But talk a bit about what we've been talking a little bit about, which is this, as a congressman, as somebody who fought on the other side of this to protect the citizens, what can be done in terms of what Michael Greenberger was saying?
First of all, I want to thank Mike and everybody else on that you got there, because these are our advocates. And let me tell you, I think that, you know, I need to talk about the event first, if you don't mind. And because I'm shocked to be able to tell you what I'm about to tell you. We had about 1,000 people show up. And I'm telling you, we were able to help probably, and we haven't gotten our final numbers yet.
Yep.
But about, I would guess, at least 500 to 600 people keep their houses. I was shocked. But I shouldn't have been shocked, because I pulled the Citigroup guy to the side and I said, you know what, I thought you guys were going to come in here and play games with my constituents, although I told you not to. But my constituents are walking out the door, some of them saving as much as $300 to $1,000 per month. And what he said basically to me was that, you know, it's better. He said, first of all, we've got, our bosses told us to try to work out the best deals that we could, and it does not help us for us to have to hold on something and deal with foreclosure. And we had, I mean, I got to tell you, I did not expect that result. My staff and I were so moved by what happened that we decided we're going to do it again. Because I believe that if enough pressure is put on these banks, we can get them to do some of the things that we may not be able to get the legislature to push to get done. And I'm not saying that, again, I'm saying this as somebody who was a bit surprised at our own efforts. This is the thing that bothers me. You got the banks who have benefited from greed, as Mike said. And then they turn around and get money from the federal government, the taxpayers' money, right? Then they turn around again, before I saw this incident this weekend, and not loan money to anybody. As a matter of fact, they cut down the credit. They cut out credit in many instances. I've got business people calling me, telling me, for example, that they can't even get a line of credit when they've been dealing with a bank for 15 or 20 years. And so, basically, the taxpayer gets royally screwed. Then we've got this New York Times article that I'm sure, I guess you may all have talked about, the one that, of course, has been in the Baltimore Sun, this thing with regard to Countrywide.
Michael Powell's article about, right,
yeah,
Wells Fargo.
Of black folks and Hispanics, mainly, to the subprime loans. And those folks really get hit. First of all, many of them could have been in a prime situation where they would have a low interest rate. Then, partly because they got a high interest rate and balloon payments and all the little tricks, they've got higher payments. And so then what happens? They get foreclosed upon. When they get foreclosed upon, what happens? Then they lose their house. Then what happens? Then they have their credit rating is destroyed. So they get hit four times. And the banks still walk away. And then we got these banks, by the way, saying that they are well, and that they want to pay the government their money back, and we know what that's all about. They don't want to adhere to compensation limits. But that's all really good. What I'm saying to the president is take some of that money, since we have healed the banks, let's heal the people. Let's take some of that money and help some people stay in their home.
Now, is anybody listening to that, Congressman Cummings?
I'm sorry?
Is the president listening to that?
I'm gonna be sending that message to beginning tomorrow. I wanted to see how this event turned out.
Right.
Because I wanted to use this event as evidence that although the president was trying to do some things and the Congress was trying to do some things, that the banking industry was not meeting up with my constituents. Well, I got a little bit of a surprise. Now, whether that will happen all over the country, but I do believe this. I believe if the president pushed hard enough, these banks could hire enough people to restructure the loans and get this job done and save a lot of people a lot of grief, save a lot of foreclosures. And I think in the end, everybody would benefit. I don't think it helps anybody, really, except a few, when we have foreclosures all over the place.
It
hurts all of our communities and our people.
Congressman Cummings, and I know Michael Greenberger, both of you are going to have to leave in a little bit, so I want you to keep answering some questions coming in. And we also have in the studio here Claudia Ray, Cor Cleary, and Bob Strupp, all part of our two-hour town meeting on housing. A lot of people have called in. Let me get a couple of phone calls in here. 410-319-8888. Pam, in your car, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, Pam.
I don't have a foreclosure problem, but my question is this. Why can't we start holding the congressmen that voted against the bankruptcy bill for consumers? Why can't we start holding them accountable for this? Anytime somebody votes against something for the public interest, we as Americans need to start holding them accountable and start raising hell to our congressmen. I mean, I know that the Maryland congressmen are doing all they can, but we have a lot of blue dog Democrats who are very conservative and, you know, really into the banks, and they're getting money from the bank. But we need to start doing something different. I mean, you know, we all don't have money. And that's basically my question, and I'll get off and let you answer that.
Well, how does it?
I and I've said it publicly, I was very disappointed that we were not able to get the bankruptcy, the cram down provision, I hate that term, but get those provisions, get that bankruptcy bill. I was, and there were quite a few Democrats that did not vote consistent with the caller. And I think at some point, folks need to answer to this, because keep in mind the other thing that I was telling my constituents the other day on Saturday. I told them that when they were doing well, they were helping to keep the banks going. When they had a job, they could help. They were depositing money in these banks.
I'm curious around this table as well, with Michael Greenberg on the phone, Claudia and Bob, Carl, your thoughts on this. How do you get people motivated out there to do this?
Well, first of all, I think the accountability opportunity is 17 months from now, and it's November 2010. And for those people who are not happy with what their legislature has done in Congress, there's where you can make them accountable, because you vote them out. And obviously that takes time and that takes preparation, so it's not too early now to energize. And I think that, you know, that's what people need to start thinking about.
Claudia?
I just want to piggyback with what Bob has said. We need to vote people out that's not helping us, you know, as people, you know, and that's what Elijah Cummings is saying, you know, working with your constituents. And we have seen this day in and day out that that's what Elijah Cummings do. But with, you know, some of these other political figures, and I normally stay out of the political arena, but I used to be a homeowner myself as well. So if someone is not doing something for me in my community and not going to help me maintain my home and help with all these policy issues, then I think we should vote these individuals out.
And Michael Greenberger, then I'm going to go over to Carl Cleary and then go back to the phones and get Elijah back in here as well. But Michael, you were, and I mean this in all due respect, a consummate insider. I mean, you were in the administration. You worked inside the Washington. So how do you see that pressure from the outside changing what you experienced on the inside?
Well, first of all, I think it is changing, and it's, you know, I fought this battle 10, 11 years ago at the tail end of the Clinton administration and lost out to Bob Rubin, Larry Summers, Alan Greenspan, and Arthur Levitt. And, you know, there's been a lot written about that and the mistakes that were made. So I think we're heading in the right direction. One thing I think that Congressman Cummings said to me that resonates, first of all, that he wanted to see how this event went, and then he wants to go talk to the president. First of all, I think the accomplishment he had over the weekend is astounding. I mean, those figures are just unbelievable. It shows you what can be done if sleeves are rolled up and you decide you're going to help the people first and the bank second. I think the president, who I have a great deal of respect for, made a mistake when he brought back a lot of the old Clinton people like Larry Summers and Tim Geithner, who were in the Treasury Department and freed up all this deregulation 10 or 11 years ago. But I think he is beginning to look to more people for advice, and I think the conversation Elijah Cummings has with him about this event is going to be very, very important. We need to have federal programs that duplicate across the country, even if it's not 600 out of 1,000, if it's 200 out of 1,000. Those are 200 people who are kept in their homes. I think there's been too much emphasis on helping the banks and too little emphasis on helping the people. I think Congressman Cummings demonstrated that when a competent person puts his mind to it, what can be done. And I think the president has to be convinced that, you know, saving homeowners is a way of saving the banks. They don't do any good to themselves when they've got these foreclosed properties on their hand. You don't only look around the city at all the boarded up houses,
right,
and you see that. So I think they're, I think we can get things done before the next election, and I think we need the strong advocates like Congressman Cummings, who have access to the White House, to make their points.
And Cocklear, before we open the phones and go back to Congressman Cummings.
Well, Mark, I'll tell you.
Yeah, you know, the other day when I was talking to my constituents, I was trying to tell them, I told them before we even got started, I said, you know, one of the most, I said, this is bigger than you. You saving your house is bigger than you. This is about generations yet unborn and being able to pass some type of wealth from generation to generation. I was telling them when I grew up, when I was a little boy, we used to have what we call funeral parties. People were so poor, Mark, that they did not have the money to be buried. And we had to have a party to raise money for the funeral. And too often in our communities, there is nothing to pass down. There is no, and I tried to explain to them that I didn't want them to just look at this cavalierly and say, look, you know, well, if I lose my house, I'll get another and I'll work it out. No, no. You have to protect your house at this moment. And I think, and I asked them to exercise patience, and I think it did work out. But I think we have to put pressure pressure's got to come from a lot of angles, including the Congress, including the president, and we've got to keep our foot on these banks. And a lot of people said to me, said, man, why are you messing with AIG? Why are you complaining about the banks? You're not going to get anywhere. But I'm telling you, when you see a constituent come to you crying and saying, you know what, I'm going to be able to stay in my house, it makes it all worth it. I'm just telling you, it does.
Congressman Elijah Cummings, one of our guests. I'm with Michael Greenberger from University of Maryland School of Law, Bob Strupp from Community Law Center, both of whom in the film you can see tomorrow night, American Casino, at the Charles Theater. We'll give you more information about that in a minute. Claudia Ray from Acorn Housing, and Carl Cleary, a housing counselor in Reservoir Hill, but much more than that. He's been involved in this for many years and has been fighting this struggle. I want to open the phones. I know you want to say something, Carl, very quickly. I want to get open the phones here before the end of the hour.
Just the one thing I want to add to that is that, and Congressman Cummings is absolutely right, the pressure has to come from all directions, and one of those directions, as and I'll shoulder this responsibility, is from us as advocates. An example is HUD's National Servicing Center out in Oklahoma City. Well, when you call out there, you basically surrender the fate of your loss mitigation clients to lenders. Lenders have basically call all the shots. Now, that's a HUD facility. They have policies, they have guidelines and rules that we all have to follow. But you know, we probably have to make sure that we're doing the watchdog role to make sure that they do what they are supposed to do. I mean, there are five workout situations for a person who's in trouble with their mortgage, three to keep them in the house, two to help them protect their credit, and make sure all those options are offered to folks. So the pressure for that has to come from everyone. That includes us as advocates. I would love to say that it's a good working relationship that exists between housing counseling agencies and the National Servicing Center out there in Oklahoma City. It isn't, but I think it's getting better. But it's only going to get better if we make sure they do what they're supposed to do.
Claudia, would try?
Right. I just wanted to say that what we have found at Acorn Housing is that you have to push back on the services. So when they give your client an unaffordable workout, don't accept it. Push it back to let them know that you did your numbers as well, you know, that we're well equipped to know when we see an unaffordable workout plan and that it's not acceptable, right? And then keep pushing it. Just don't allow the client to accept this. And I think that years ago what we were seeing is that the services was offering the clients loan modifications and that was it. But now the world has changed. The housing counselors are now asking for recommendations. What's the best affordable workout option? And that's how we can push back and not allow the services to tell us what's acceptable and what's not.
We're talking about the housing crisis facing America. Before we go to break here, let me get one quick call in for maybe Michael Greenberger and Congressman Cummings can get their last word in before they have to run. Our rest of our guests are staying with us. 410-319-8888. Charlie, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for this show. This is really great. When we had the election, and there were states where Obama, you know, was iffy, and Maryland wasn't iffy, I was able to sit at my phone and call people in those states to influence the outcome. What I'm hearing is in Congress, Maryland's not the issue. The issue is in these other states, and I'm wondering if anyone on the national level, like anybody, Move On, anybody, is organizing something where we can try to mobilize people all over the country to do this.
That's interesting. Well, I'm only just joking, we only have like a couple of minutes before we have to take a break, and I know that both the Elijah Cummings and Michael Greenberger have to go at that point. And I wonder if, starting with Congressman and then Michael, very quickly, if you have any answer to that.
I don't know that there's anything organized, and maybe Michael knows of something, but I'm saying we have the power to do it, and we've got to pull groups together. They aren't already together. To put this pressure on, I really believe that we can get a lot of meaningful modifications of these loans and get them done fairly quickly with the proper pressure.
Michael,
I think we're in a deficit position in terms of organization here, and the just simple reason is up until this meltdown, progressives, Move On, ACLU, American Constitution Society, Center for American Progress, are all focused on First Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment rights, due process, the courts, and those are all very, very important. But boy, we are facing the issue of our lifetime right now. You just have to look across the city of Baltimore and see what happened to this city. And progressives have ceded the field on finance to conservatives, the Republican Party, and the banks. We've got to get back up to speed on this. There are groups that are in formation stage. They need funding. I'm working with a lot of them. But this is a target we have to hit. We're way, way behind the curve on having advocacy groups on this issue to rally people on a nationwide basis.
We're going to take a very short break. We'll come back to other guests here. And I think, Michael Greenberger, we're going to pick up on that point. I think that what you're saying is very critical, both of you. And I want to thank you for taking the hour with us. And we look forward to having you on very soon and continue this push to get people more involved so we can actually organize something in our communities. Michael Greenberger, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mark.
And Congressman Elijah Cummings, it's always a pleasure and honor to have you on our program.
Yeah, Mark, it's good to be with you. And we're going to do another one of these in about 3 months.
Well,
and I'll keep you informed.
Our airwaves are always open to you.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're going to come right back to our guests, Robert Strupp, Claudia Ray, and Carl Cleary, and continue our town meeting on the housing crisis. Have at it with all of you. And those of you who are hanging up now, don't hang up. Mike and Larry, you're still left. Others call in at 410-319-8888. We're going to come to your calls and do more. tell you how you can get involved, tell you about the demonstration at Wells Fargo, and tell you about the movie coming up that can help organize a resistance to what's going on to our housing crisis. We'll be right back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression, and over 7 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. Go to MECU.com for more information. We'll be right back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.